listening to KBOO Portland.
KBOO's zine, The Boo Beat, is back with a second issue, featuring KBOO's program guide, interviews with local activists and community members, spotlights on local businesses, on-the-ground reporting, and fun quizzes and crosswords. Our zine has its finger on the pulse of Portland, and you won't want to miss it. To snag your copy, visit kboo.fm/zine.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with the requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. The nominating committee meets on the second Tuesday of the month at 6 p.m. This month's meeting will be held online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting virtually can be found on our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held. There's something missing and I'm lit and I got something to say.
Good evening. You're listening to Transpositive here on KBOO Community Radio. My name is Emma, and I use she and her pronouns.
I'm Nicolette, and I use they, them pronouns.
I'm Sheila, and I use she, her pronouns.
Great. So welcome to Transpositive. Tonight we're going to be, for the first half of the show, we're going to be talking about transgender news from the last couple of weeks. And then at the end of the show, we'll be airing some audio of community event last month. So let's go ahead and start with trans news. Nicolette, do you want to lead us out?
Sure. Yeah. So the first story I would like to talk about, on September 28th, a trans man in North Riverside, Illinois, was harassed by security and kicked out of a women's bathroom at an arcade. Indiana resident Lucian Bates was at Round One Arcade with his fiance and a friend, and when he went to use the bathroom, because he was assigned female at birth, he went into the women's restroom and asked his companions to go with him because he felt that was his safest option. After he entered the restroom, a security guard walked in and told him he couldn't be there and that he needed to be in the restroom that matched his ID. When the guard was shown the ID with the F gender marker on it, he called for backup and several other guards entered the bathroom. The guards told Bates that it was dangerous for him to be in the restroom because children visit the facility, and another guard screamed in Bates' face and threatened to have him arrested. Bates and his companions left the arcade, but then went back in and asked for contact information to file a complaint, only for security to tell them they needed to leave, and a manager followed them out, accusing them of loitering. I'd like to note this also comes after another incident in July, where trans man Noah Ruiz was assaulted and arrested for using a women's restroom at a campground. So transphobes insist that they want trans people to use the restroom aligning with their assigned sex, but clearly, that's not what they want either. We do that, and then we get in trouble anyway. They just want us to not use the bathroom at all. And especially considering the guards at the arcade accused Bates of being a danger to children, transphobes are seeing our very existence as a threat. What they really want is for us to just not exist. And furthermore, bathroom policing is also affecting cisgender people, such as the two cis women who were forcibly removed from a Boston hotel in May after a security guard asked one of them to prove her sex while using the women's restroom. So all of this proves that anti-trans bathroom laws do not work. But now I'd like to hear your thoughts.
Do you want to go first, Sheila?
Sure. Well, bathrooms are always the drama thing, and they're usually completely misconstrue the nature of public facilities. First of all, a public facility is by its definition not private. If someone's going to go into a bathroom, they're going to be doing bodily functions with members of their sex, however that is defined, which means it's not completely private. You're not in your home anymore. So the question is, what is its actual function in a public setting? And the answer is that people have biological needs and they have to meet them. And this is why they make these things available for everyone. And the question then becomes, how much of a interference with their privacy is implied if someone of whatever gender, if assuming that they opened it up to absolutely open completely, how much of that, you know, in other words, what is the actual harm being done? Everyone's aware that both sexes have the same needs, but the idea is that in some way we assume that we maintain, I think, an illusion that somehow the other sex doesn't have these functions. And so what we do is we presume, this is the other thing, that somehow or other you can't be in any semi-naked situation without having your sexuality compromised, as in someone is going to act out sexually. Well, you know, for years and years, they were saying that gay men met in public restrooms and did have sex there. And that was in some ways the only way that they ever found a way to signal to each other that this was at least a semi-private place. And so maybe there's a little bit of a hangover about that. But in any case, the point is that we have to maintain this illusion of separation between the sexes, because if you're gay or if you're lesbian, by definition, you might be sharing space with someone who might find you sexually attractive. And if that's the case, does it make any difference if it's a male that is finding a woman attractive or another woman who is finding a woman attractive? So in other words, if it's going to be a matter of sex, then why not just simply say that? Say, if you're attracted to anybody in this restroom, don't come into this restroom. That would be the most obvious choice if it really does constitute a sexual threat. If it doesn't constitute a sexual threat, then the only thing that's remaining is the pretense that we don't have common needs. And maybe it's the idea that somehow whatever it is that goes on in relieving those needs is more permissible amongst people that share your same bodily anatomy than it would be for someone who doesn't. But does that really make any sense? So let me just throw those ideas and let's just try to unpack and dissolve this thing and say, well, what is it that they're really trying to do? Because it's always put forward that they're trying to protect women from rape and children from being molested. Neither of those two things are likely in an average woman's room, for obvious reasons that you're behind the stall. You have a locked door on the stall. Unless someone wants to slither like a snake underneath there, how in the world is this going to happen? And why will someone with all the cell phones that everyone now has call for immediate assistance? So in other words, it's really a matter of embarrassment and arcane Victorian ideas rather than anything that's real, at least the way I see it.
Yeah, I see what you're saying there. And that also makes me think, well, if we're trying to segregate bathrooms based on who you're attracted to, what are multisexuals like me supposed to do? I guess we can't go to the bathroom anywhere.
Or either that, or you have to look really bored while you're in there.
So in more bathroom news, in Austin, Texas, in December, members of the Texas State troopers were assigned to guard the women's bathroom in case any transgender women tried to sneakily use the women's bathroom at the Texas State Capitol building. Three state troopers, dressed in protective gear, including bulletproof vests, standing in front of the women's bathroom. Apparently, the state troopers were required to ask women who were attempting to use the bathroom to show them their state-issued ID. And if their state-issued ID said that they were female, then the troopers gave them permission to pass through them and to go into the women's bathroom. I have not heard reports on how the women felt about being asked to show their state ID, their state-issued ID before they use the bathroom, but apparently that's how they do it in Texas. This happened after four transgender women were criminally cited and issued violation notices for using the bathroom at the Texas State Capitol. They were given criminal trespass notices and told that they were prohibited from entering the Texas State Capitol building or anywhere of the grounds of the Texas State Capitol for 1 year for the crime of using the bathroom. This comes after the passage of Senate Bill 8, known as the Texas Women's Privacy Act, which restricts public restrooms, locker rooms, and other facilities that transgender people can use. It's basically a law that's designed to prevent transgender women from using the bathroom. And you can see how, what the priorities are of the Texas State Troopers harass women using the bathroom and to criminally cite transgender women for using the bathroom. So, the very beginning of our show today is there's a lot of obsessions that state troopers and law enforcement officers are having over women using the bathroom. So I just wanted to share that story.
I have some thoughts on
Oh,
that
great. Yeah, go ahead.
immediately.
Yeah, great.
In line with it all depends on kind of where we want to draw the line about what we're really looking for. What we really don't want is we don't want an individual trans person without anybody to back them up and assure people. In other words, what if they're there with a heterosexual person that can say, this is my friend, this is someone that I intimately trust. In other words, in the early days, it was really helpful for people that were really scared to enter for fear of embarrassment, if nothing else, not let alone police harassment, to go into a woman's room. It might be, and so it really is better if you had a cover person who was, in other words, and a legitimate person, a legitimate bathroom goer, i.e., heterosexual and appearing heterosexual, that could go in with you. Then somehow or other, you could ride in on their coattails. But if we really wanted to make bathroom our issue, we could do what they did with ACT UP and did with what they used to call ZAPS in the 60s, which is what you do is you get together and you make a point of it, especially if it's at the state capitol, and just get the most butch people that you can possibly find to and make them go into the lay have them volunteer for the day to just one after the other, ladies' room, ladies' room, ladies' room, and then get the highest drag, most beautiful drag queens in the world to go into the men's room and do follow their rules. Then they would have to be consistent. They'd have to say, well, now you're really embarrassing us because it looks very strange. Everybody's going in the bathroom that they should go into according to the law, but everyone's still nervous. So what are we going to do with you people? I say, well, now you're going to make us have a certain dress code before we can enter into the bathroom. And in other words, you bring out the absurdity by dramatizing it, and you do it in a way that's actually funny. And then you make sure that you get coverage for that. That's one way to go about this thing, because since they want us to disappear, the answer is the best way not to disappear is to either appear but with intent and know exactly what you're going to do and exactly what your aim is, or alternatively, you have to kind of go undercover, which means that you follow the rules, you look gender neutral, but then they just push the border back farther still, because it's very true. They want us not to exist. They refuse to admit the category of transgender as being an authentic way of being human.
Yeah, exactly. Like, even if we play by their rules, as we've seen in these stories, they don't care about that. It's not that we're not playing by their rules, it's that their rules that they really want is that we just don't exist.
This, the other things are in the similar light of, what do we do when you're a part of a group of people that they do not want you to exist? And the German word for extermination was Vernichtung, which means to make something nothing. And that's essentially what they're doing. They're trying to take something, and rather than deal with the concept, their idea is, we'll define the concept out of existence first, and then after that, then we can sit there and make this the new reality. But it's very clear that after all the LGBT stuff that has gone on for the past 20 and 30 years, the idea of going back into some global closet is really not viable. It's not, we can't undo what we've done historically to reach this present moment.
So in other news, in case anybody didn't see, Robert Kennedy, who introduced legislation this past week banning transgender affirming care for all youth, anyone under the age of 18 in the entire country. So much for states' rights and states' rights arguments that Republicans have been making for the last 10 years, that the Supreme Court has been making. Apparently, Republicans don't care about states' rights when they want to take away your right. So in response to this proposal from the Department of Health and Human Services to deny all transgender-related health care for anyone under the age of 18, 19 states, led by Oregon, are suing the Department of Health and Human Services over the gender-affirming care restrictions. So this is a coalition of 19 states, and again, it was led by Oregon, which is great. In the last 2 weeks, a coalition of states has sued the Department of Health and Human Services over new federal rules that sharply restrict access to gender-affirming care for minors, especially through Medicaid and other federal programs. What's important here isn't just who is suing, but why they're suing. The states, including Oregon, are arguing that the federal government is overriding established medical standards and interfering with state-level healthcare decisions and effectively creating a de facto national ban without actually passing any law. This is part of a broader trend we've been tracking on this show, policy by administrative strangulation, making care technically legal, but practically impossible. They don't ban it outright, but they defund it, they scare providers, and they bury it in compliance rules. And the result is that trans kids lose access. So does anybody want to talk about that?
Yeah. I know this is something we're seeing a lot of lately. And I know the argument that people keep saying is that, oh, well, you know, kids don't really know what they want. They can make that decision when they're older, when they're adults. But the thing is, if you wait that long, it can be too late. For one thing, sometimes puberty can cause irreversible changes that a trans person may not be able to reverse when they decide to transition. And for another, let's face it, gender dysphoria can be so severe, it can lead to suicide. So this is why gender-affirming care is literally life-saving. And delaying it can actually end lives. It can make things worse. It can permanently scar someone. So, you know, that's why at the very least, like, we have been pushing for trans youth to at least receive hormone blockers, to buy them time to decide if they want to transition or not, so that they don't go through the wrong puberty and potentially trigger even worse gender dysphoria that could just ruin and even end their lives. And it's, you know, you can argue all you want that kids don't know what they want, but that's why we're asking for them to have time to decide. And furthermore, that's not even true. A lot of kids do know what they want. I've known that I was trans since I was 5 years old. 30 years later, that still hasn't changed. You know, so that's the thing about trans youth. They do know. And even if they don't, why don't we give them time to decide?
Well, some thoughts. We know for a fact certain things. We know that we are off the grid in terms of the way the federal government and particularly the executive is behaving at this particular moment. So the way I phrase it when I talk to my friends, I say, you have to understand, we are already off the highway. We're not even really on the little blue highways anymore. We're on a Jeep going over rough and rugged ground. And every day we wake up to something new, whether it's threatening reporters that they should be fired because they're reporting the news, whether they're not giving sufficient deference to the August executive order that somehow or other deserves authority just because it has it. We've never, in other words, all we have to do is look at all the other things that is happening right now to know that we're not the top on the list. We're just one of the more obvious ones. And the thing that bothers me is that when it's brought forward, particularly in the president's speeches recently, where he'll say they want sex change for everybody, in implying that somehow it's as easy as ordering a pizza somewhere. And it's not. There are standards of care still. There are professional standards. We have been able to meet those standards for years and have doctors risk their medical license if they were not doing something that was appropriate. And in fact, now the standards, at least unless they change, would mandate that doctors that fail to live up to that are putting themselves at risk with some sort of discipline for that. That's not professional conduct. So they're caught in a horrible bind, which I've mentioned in one of our other shows, which is that what do you do? Just pick and choose? If you're going to get slapped by something one way or the other, your only chance is simply don't have any transgender clients, which means that once again, try to make us simply disappear. And that's obviously not the answer. But this question about whether or not people are ready for permanent lasting changes, if I understand the standards of care, that means surgical intervention, and it should not happen except in the rarest cases under the age of 18. So already that's been covered by the standards of care. So the myth that they keep coming out that people are going to walk away and come back with different genitalia in the course of an afternoon, no hospitalization, no nothing. How do they get away with saying that? So the fact that they have to do it in such ridiculous terms implies that they have absolutely no knowledge about what they're talking about. They're implying that this is something easy, that these are snap-on parts on a doll, and they aren't. It's a big deal to have a sex reassignment surgery below the belt, and it's not going to happen the way they say it's going to happen, nor is most of the other stuff. It takes a long time to recover from even like breast augmentation, which I can tell you is a hard thing to go through. And it's not an afternoon procedure. And so what I'm thinking is that if we're dealing with people that are scoring political points by deliberately falsifying what's actually going on, then obviously we're off the game board, because we can't even treat it as though they have a point when they have to lie in order to exercise their power.
That's a good point. I am still seeing a lot of people claiming that, you know, oh, kids are just like 5-year-olds are getting their genitals cut off. And it's like literally none of that is happening. Most of the time, like, kids aren't even being put on HRT. At most, they're socially transitioning and getting hormone blockers to, you know, prevent them from going through puberty until they're old enough to be able to transition if they decide to. And if they change their minds at any point, they can just stop taking the blockers and go through a regular puberty. It's not irreversible. Mm-hmm. They're talking about stuff
and
that
this
isn't
is the
happening.
Biggest thing. We're still a tiny minority. They're also implying that somehow if we make this possible, that almost everybody is going to want to change their sex and do it for the wrong reasons. And I think that most people do not understand what adolescence is really like, and the intense scrutiny that goes on even within gender categories about whether or not you're living up to the gender category. So for transgender people, it's not like we all get a free ride. Most of us remember our own adolescence, and it was not easy. Some of us went undercover, some of us went into total denial, some of us fought back and did the best we possibly could to adjust to whatever norms were given to us so that we wouldn't be bullied, we wouldn't have problems. So to assume that somehow that's all changed, we're a little bit more, it's a little easier than it used to be, but still not silken. And even though there's maybe more people coming out than ever used to come out before, it's anything other than a hula hoop situation where everybody wants one. I guarantee that. It's never going to threaten heterosexuality or heteronormativity.
Thank you. Would you mind if I go on to the next news story?
No, that'd be fine.
Great. So, another story in the news from the past 2 weeks, a National Security Agency employee who is transgender is suing the Trump administration over the immutable sex policy issued by Trump's executive order. One of the very first executive orders that the transgender obsessed not my President Trump issued on his first day in office. A National Security Agency employee has filed suit against the federal government challenging an executive order that defines sex as immutable and restricts the use of pronouns and gender recognition in federal workplaces. This matters for two reasons. First, this isn't about language etiquette. It's about employment rights. If the federal government can say, we will not recognize who you are, they can also say, you don't belong here. Secondly, the policy doesn't stay contained. Federal rules tend to cascade outward into contractors, grant recipients, nonprofits, schools, and hospitals. So then people ask, why do pronouns matter? Well, this is why. Because recognition is infrastructure. The name of the employee who is suing the administration is named Sarah O'Neill. She's a data scientist who is transgender. And she wants to dispute the policy issued by the Trump administration that says there's only two immutable sexes. The lawsuit was filed in the third week of December in the District Court of Maryland. And since Trump's executive order, Sarah O'Neill asserts that the National Security Agency has canceled its policy recognizing her transgender identity. So this also prevents her from using the women's restroom, which is a really big deal, and also does not allow her to say that she is female in written communications or to use the pronouns she or her. So this is like really insane, just kind of, you know, this is some of the insanity coming out of the White House right now, not allowing women to call themselves she or her. Again, this obsession with the bathroom, not allowing women to use the bathroom. So good for Sarah O'Neill for suing the Trump administration. Good luck to her. Is there any thoughts or comments on that?
Nicola?
Yeah, I mean, I kind of just want to agree with what you said. It's, I think a lot of it is rooted in misogyny. They do have this obsession with women, and that includes trans women. They think if they, you know, we know that they want to restrict women's rights, and that also includes restricting trans women's rights. And I think that's part of where this obsession with trans people using the bathroom comes from, is this obsession with genitals. But anyway, what are your thoughts, Sheila?
Well, one of the things that I noticed in some recent talks from President Trump is that he is more or less implied that we're going to get back to the way it used to be. That's his, the essence of his whole appeal is that somehow or other the society has gone completely cuckoo and that it's allowed things and all we have to do is just have enough willpower to just say enough is enough and it's all going to be over. And that fails to consider the fact that there are most of us are already transitioned. This is not something that we're debating starting. It's done. And if it's done, where do they expect us to go? There are body parts that are breasts, for instance, that are pretty hard to you can't compress silicone. You can't wear a binder. You can't compress a liquid. It's a principle of hydraulics. And so basically, people can tell. They can read us. And when they read us and we're dressed, then that makes us look very strange because now we're trying to maybe appear to be someone that's transgender, but moving in the other direction than the direction that we actually took. And so no matter what we do, we're going to have problems. But the idea that the simple solution to things is to just say, it's over. And look at the other things that they're saying. It's just over. We're done with vaccinations. We're done with democratic government. We're not going to rely on the legislature anymore to make the laws. We'll just let the president do it, and he won't even read the thing. He has somebody shove something under his face. What is this that I'm signing? Oh, Mr. President, this is a thing to eliminate the insanity of transgender people. Oh, well, fine. With his big felt tip pen, done. And everybody says, oh my God, why were all the other presidents to sleep at the switch if it's this simple to simply live and create the society that we want? And we'll just say, what is this one for? Oh, this is to eliminate all of the religions but Christianity. Oh, okay, I'll sign that. Da, 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 da. And if there's ever a problem, instead of dealing with it and accepting the fact that a federal judge at the local district court level has made their decision, that should be the end of the story. The Supreme Court does not take every single thing under advisement. There's not enough. Think of how many all the circuits that are churning out appellate opinions. Does that mean that the Supreme Court is going to review every single one of those and then check with President Trump to be sure if that's acceptable? No, there's no way that could happen. But Trump is treating it that way. It's as though I will do anything I want, and if you try to stop me, I'll just appeal it to my pet Supreme Court. Well, what is that? It's not even possible. So the assumption is, which we are all observing, that this president is acting illegally on a day-by-day basis. And he's appointing people that think like him and think of him as the person to finally create the society the way they want it to be, not the way the American people want it to be.
And also, I'd like to note that I mean, I keep seeing all this rhetoric of, oh, well, Trump's going to put things back to the way they used to be. And people are finally waking up and they think that that means that trans people just aren't going to exist anymore. But the thing is, we have always existed. Trans people have been documented to exist for hundreds of thousands of years. So we're not going to just go away just because some president or some law is saying that we don't exist. We will still exist. And no, people are not waking up to it because literally we have more and more scientific research and advances and studies proving and validating our existence. Like, we're not going anywhere. And if anything, we are only going to become stronger and more visible.
Great.
And I think it's important to know that we're still a minority, though. And the answer that puzzles me even is to say, why, if we're less than 1% of the population, why are we so important? And the answer seems to be that we're like the canaries in the coal mine for all the other things that they want to have happen instantaneously. They want to ignore the fact that we have separation of church and state. They want to ignore the fact that we have to have, that there are certain reasons why a country cannot invade another country, why we can't annex Greenland just because we want to do it, because that is against the United Nations charter that set up the United Nations that we have honored for years, that it's not possible to have an aggressive war and just take somebody else's country. So let's see this in the broader possible perspective. every single day we're witnessing at atrocities that makes our little tiny cauldron one look like nothing compared to, but it touches us so deeply because we're talking about our very bodies, and that's why it's important to us.
So the other story in the news, which is quite disturbing, is that transgender prisoners allege that there was targeted harassment by supervisors at the nation's worst ranked prison. So here's what's going on. Transgender prisoners allege that at one of the most dangerous prisons in the United States, transgender incarcerated people have come forward alleging systematic harassment by supervisory staff. This includes misgendering, the denial of Medicare, retaliation for filing complaints, and forced and coerced sex. This is in direct violation of the prison Rape Elimination Act. At the facility, 18% of prisoners at the facility, this is not just transgender people, we don't have data on how many transgender people, but 18% of the people in that facility report forced or coerced participation in sexual acts. We've talked about this before on Trans Positive, how prisons act as gender enforcement machines. And when trans people are incarcerated, their bodies become sites of punishment, ideological battlegrounds, and warning signs to the rest of society. The message is really simple, that this is what happens to you if you don't conform. Incarcerated people hold certain protections through the Prison Rape Elimination Act, and but the administration is trying to roll back the protection of transgender, intersex, and religious incarcerated individuals the opportunity to shower separately. So again, this is the Trump administration is trying to make it to take away the rights of transgender people to request that they are allowed to shower separately. That's just one of the many abuses that transgender people are facing at this prison. And the statistics aren't surprising. According to Sarah Keeley, a 35-year-old transgender woman who has been incarcerated at that prison for 5 years. According to Them magazine, she said the leadership has created a culture where sexual harassment and violence flourish. The policies, while they don't explicitly ban transgender people from protected shower time, it does provide limits. And it means that separate showers are not necessarily accessible, which means that transgender people at this prison are going to have to shower with people who do not share the same sex as them. And I think you can imagine what that would lead to. So this is what's going on at this prison. And it's been major news for transgender people in the last 2 weeks. So I just wanted to...
You're listening to Transpositive here on KBOO Community Radio. So what we just heard was transgender news from the last couple of weeks with Emma, Nicolette, and Sheila. And now we're going to be transitioning to the next segment of the show. We're going to be hearing from some transgender people who spoke at the recent Transgender Day of Remembrance during the community speak section, sharing their coming out stories, talking about their experiences as transgender people, and sharing a little bit about themselves. So stay tuned for that next here on Transpositive on KBOO Community Radio.
I'm Michaela McCormick. I want to share with you some of my spiritual practice and how I make use of it as a transgender woman. My wisdom tradition, Buddhism, like many others, offers a paradoxical path to self-acceptance and attachment, or non-attachment. Embracing who and what I am without any expectation of recognition or reward. Another paradox. To know our true selves, we must let go of self or any notion of who we think we are or how others see and label us. And in order to let go, we first need to be seen, first by ourselves. Yet another paradox. Being transgender, or anyone being who they really are, demands fierceness that goes beyond aggression. The Buddhist teaching is that the source of this fierceness is tenderness, knowing your heart, being authentic, caring, and having compassion, first for yourself and through that for others. This requires risk, vulnerability, facing our demons from within and out in the world. It means being embodied, allowing ourselves to feel whatever comes, direct, lived experience. Being authentic, not our or anyone else's concept of who we are. It means going beyond social conditioning and pigeonholing and the trauma that results from that. Being fearless in facing ourselves, allowing ourselves to feel, because if we don't feel, we can't care. Being curious and open-hearted, neither inadequate nor arrogant. All of this put together means cultivating an awakened heart as the ground of our being. When I first revealed the girl in me at the age of 5, the only resource I had to assert that was knowing my heart. Young, timid, and shy, my tenderness was a long, long way from fostering the fierceness needed to face the quashing of my femininity by everyone around me. It took decades to claim that fierceness. I did it in large part by riding the privilege of my whiteness and the gender that was imposed on me. Along with causing harm to others, that exacted a high personal price. But in a way, I was lucky. Many of the trans people who haven't had such resources, however tainted or phony, are the ones we're honoring here today. To live and face yourself and the world as a trans person takes deep vulnerability and great risk. To survive takes fierce compassion for yourself and a solid but caring fierceness to accept or defend yourself against what the world dishes out. So love yourself and don't take yourself too seriously.
So my name's Jasmine. pronouns are she, her. I came out as a trans femme when I was 42 in the Klamath Falls area. A little challenging area to transition. Multiple death threats and attempts on my life there. I am one of probably, I would say, there are probably a dozen or so active trans femme attorneys in the state. And I would say it is a challenging time, probably the most challenging time to be a major felony active trans femme attorney in the state of Oregon. Because we have so many challenges affecting our community. We have so many challenges affecting in terms of resources and everything else that we deal with, both in our community and just in our state. And right now, everything seems so overwhelming for us to deal with on a daily basis. I would say that as a queer person who grew up in the early 80s and having watched kind of how this movement has grown up, I sort of feel equally overwhelmed but also blessed. You know, every one of our trans brothers and sisters who have passed on, I sort of feel like they're kind of angels on our shoulders, and none of them should have been lost. But at the same time, there's a road that they've paved before us. And you know, every one of these days of remembrance are important, and they're solemn, and they're spiritual for those of us that have a spiritual kind of connection. And like, these days are hard, but for me they're important. And none of them, from my perspective, should be just passed on without the appropriate amount of respect. Every one of those souls were important. Every one of those stories need to be told and remembered. And we still have to fight like hell for the stories that are left to be told. I represent kids, and I represent adults, and I don't know where we're going. I don't know where we have left to go. I don't know what the path looks like. But for those of us who have privilege, and have a voice, and have a license, and can make a difference, I know we have to do something about this. We've got to stand up. I mean, there are, you know, I would say in Oregon, probably 10% of transgender people have health insurance and a place to live and know where their next meal is. 90% don't. And we have to advocate. Like, there's not a single transgender politician in Oregon, in the state senate or in the House of Representatives. That means that everyone else is telling us what we're doing, and we don't have a perspective in there. And right now we're all reactionary. So right now, you know, as an attorney, and I'm also part of the Trans Law Caucus, you know, so we kind of get together once a month and we kind of decide how we can. So I find a real connection with days like this, because it's really important. I try to learn as much as I can about our brothers and sisters who have passed, and try to get as much as I can from their stories and see what I can get from them, and hopefully I can learn something that I can take with me.
What an amazing night we are having. My name is Carter, and I appreciate the opportunity to be speaking tonight. It is an honor to be here with all of you, because I'm like a cat with 9 lives, but instead I'm on my 10th. This year has been crazy in so many ways. I made some very poor choices that ended with me being on a ventilator 3 times at the beginning of the year. After those experiences, I decided I wasn't going to let it ruin my life. I now have been in a local comedy show, joined a college aerial class, which ended with a new wishful career in the circus. I like to share my story because, while as unique as it is, many transgender people have similar experiences as me. The good, the bad, the happy. We all have our own experiences that are because we are trans. This year, I decided to socially detransition, which for me was one of the hardest things I could do, as I've spent the last 12 years transitioning to the person I am. I spent years being bullied, harassed, and purposefully misgendered. I've been attacked, sexually assaulted, been delayed and denied medical care, all because of my trans identity. It took many appointments with medical and mental health professionals to make this decision, which is why I didn't share my pronouns. I spent my whole life being me, but because of this administration, I no longer feel safe being a transgender person in America. However, I am still transgender. How I dress doesn't make me transgender. I am proud to be gender fluid now and always. We need to continue to support one another in our communities. No matter who you are, we are all being attacked right now. We are all going to survive. The only way we are going to survive this administration is if we are all connected. We are all valuable, and we all deserve to live. Not survive, but live. I have been a part of the queer community since I was 12. At that time, I didn't know the world was not safe for queer people. I was going to a church that ended up being a cult that controlled who you dated, what jobs you could have, and who you could spend time with. When I came out, the church surrounded me several times and tried to pray the gay away. Once in front of 300 people, that was recorded and put on YouTube. Another was in front of 500 people, where I was tackled to the ground. Both these times, I was called demonic, and yet I became more resilient. I left the cult at 16, and I planted myself deeper into my queer community. And I hope I can continue bringing awareness to discrimination our community faces until we are all safe.
Hi, this is Emma, and you've been listening to Transpositive PDX here on KBOO Community Radio. As we close tonight's episode of Transpositive, I want to hold together the two halves of what you've heard in today's show. We begin with the headlines, policy shifts, court rulings, and ongoing attempts to legislate transgender people out of public life. important information, but also the kind of news that you can feel overwhelmed when it's detached from the human beings who are most affected by it. News alone can flatten us into abstractions, issues, debates, and talking points. And this is news about real people whose lives are being affected by transgender discrimination. And the second half of the show, we heard something entirely different. At the Trans Day of Remembrance gathering, transgender people spoke their truths, not as symbols or statistics, but as full human beings, insisting on being seen, remembered, and loved. By telling these stories on the air, we honor not only the lives who were cut short, but also those who are still here, still speaking, and still surviving. Thank you so much for listening and for standing out with our community. This has been Transpositive PDX on KBOO Community Radio.
Transgender people don't live here.
I've never met anyone who's transgender.
I swear I don't know someone who's transgender.
Transgender and non-binary people like me hear this all the time.
But according to the HRC Foundation, there are more than 2 million transgender people in the United States.
We live in every community across this country.
You might be surprised to hear that there are more transgender and non-binary people in the United States than there are
Starbucks,
McDonald's, and Walmart locations combined.
In fact, if you put us all together,
there'd be more non-binary and transgender folks than the populations of DC,
or Nebraska,
or Maine,
or Idaho,
or West Virginia.
As a matter of fact, 15 states have a lower population than the amount of trans folks in the U.S.
So here are a few things to keep in mind.
You don't always know when a person is trans.
But we're your neighbors,
your co-workers,
your students,
your customers,
and even your friends and family.
We exist in every culture, todas las culturas, throughout human history.
And while we're more visible than ever before,
sometimes you just don't see us.
So when you hear about politicians pushing for discriminatory bills,
know this, these bills address problems that aren't even real.
Problems that don't actually exist.
But we do.
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 And we need your support.
Emma, I am a co-host of Transpositive, KBOO. At KBOO, we prove every day that people-powered radio has the ability to bring us together across distances and give us hope when we feel despair. Your friends at KBOO want to remind you that generosity has the same power. Join thousands of KBOO supporters from all around the world, and let's rally together to build stronger communities. If you can, just go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to this number 44321. And thanks so much for your support of KBOO Community Radio. Bedroom surprise. They call it climbing, and I call it visibility. They call it fullness, and I call it visibility.
HABU Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KABU in accordance with requirements.